Hey there, opera fans. I'm Eric Teague. My pronouns are he, him, his, and I'm primarily a costume designer. You may have seen some of my work in different houses around the U.S., but, fun fact, I'm also a trans man. Ever wondered how alternative identities thrive in the opera world? As someone who makes art for his living, I wanted to explore that question the best way I knew how, by talking to some folks. On this show, I'll speak with other artists who exist under the rainbow umbrella, and talk about life, work, and what makes us shine the brightest. So now I'm wearing a new hat, as your host for Come As You Are, the podcast that goes beyond the curtain with our industry's amazing artists from the LGBTQ+ community and our allies. Think of this as a virtual coffee hour with some fascinating people whose work you've heard or seen in your favorite shows. Whether singers, directors, technicians, or designers, the thing that we share in common is that we all defy the gender expectations often associated with our industry. So grab yourself a cup and join us for a good story. Today's guest is an acclaimed filmmaker with an immense body of work. She has been a producer on documentaries such as The Death and Life of Marsha P. Johnson and Transhood, but she is most recognized as the director of Prodigal Sons, Dark Money, and the Transgender Pioneers episode of the HBO Max LGBTQ+ rights docuseries Equal. But our audiences at the Atlanta Opera will know her best as the co-librettist and video content creator of the opera As One. Please welcome to the show, Kimberly Reed. Thanks for joining us today, Kimberly.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, we're so excited to do your piece. It's a really, really great thing to show to the city of Atlanta.
Yeah, and we love being there. It's just it's so great. We have a map of all the different states that As One has visited, and it's great to just follow the influence of the piece and see how it connects with the audiences. It's really my favorite part of the rollout. Piece.
Well, here at Come As You Are, we like to introduce our identities and orientations up top. So, for example, I'm your friendly neighborhood trans man with he, him pronouns. How about you?
Your friendly neighborhood trans woman with she, her pronouns.
Yeah, that's awesome. I have to say, but part of my joy in taking this job was being able to work on trans-centered art with other trans people. Like, how often does that happen?
Yeah, it's a really special opportunity. I think a really important and crucial, mandate as well. And, you know, our piece, I think, introduces a lot of cis, and by cis, I just mean not trans,
sure.
A lot of cis audiences to trans folks, maybe for the first time. That's really an honor and an opportunity, and I think something we really have to take advantage of every opportunity we get. But one of the really important aspects of the piece that as creators we've really tried to emphasize and require as much as we can is to encourage all of the local productions just to employ as many trans or non-binary folks behind the scenes, in front of the scenes, as possible. And, I hope that, one of the main impacts that we've had is to be able to encourage hiring and promotion of trans and non-binary folks from within some of the organizations that we're lucky enough to visit.
Was that something that you as a team really thought about and expressed from the very beginning?
Absolutely. Yeah. And we try to push forward. We have a website where we kind of have our wishes that are kind of disseminated to the producing organizations. And that's one that we really push for is to, along with things of like encouraging, non-gendered bathrooms and stuff like that. To also just, this is the sort of environment around the production of As One that we would encourage producing organizations to follow. So, we're trying to tell trans-centered stories on the stage, but you know, getting people more familiar with trans stories off the stage is part of what we can do with productions like this. So we're always very happy when it encourages that.
It also helps with the sort of care and feeding of your performers and your artists at these different companies as well, to foster a better environment to do a piece that is so arresting and so immediate and so close to home for a lot of people. It's one thing to go out and sing a character and embody that character, but it's a whole nother thing when that character literally plucks chords out of your own life experience. It takes a lot out of you. So it is crucial for companies to have a support structure for their artists.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And one of the, I think all of us were surprised by the popularity of As One and the number of productions that we're fortunate enough to have received. One thing that we realized with so many productions is just that there's really a paucity of training for trans voices. And that's why the creators of As One, Laura Kaminsky, the composer, and Mark Campbell, the co-librettist along with me, we came up with a new scholarship that's going to be called the True Voice Award. It's going to be disseminated and run by Washington National Opera. And what we realized with all of the production is that the pipeline of training for trans voices just wasn't there. So what we're trying to do with the True Voice Award is to encourage that pipeline at one of the premier opera organizations in the country. And that we're just very excited about that. It's going to be rolling out very soon.
That's something well to be excited about. Believe it or not, Francesca Zambello, who is a friend, texted me about this award. It was like, have you heard about this? Because you should have. And I honestly sat down on my couch and I welled up because on a personal note, I thought that I wanted to be an opera singer when I was a much younger person. And then I walked away from it completely. I gave it up because I didn't see a place for me in that performance life at all. And I could train for years with a voice that I didn't like coming out of my face, or I could, take the things that I had learned from the study and apply it to other avenues. I mean, we're lucky. I'm a pretty okay designer, I like to say, but I wonder like what life might have been if there were organizations like that and training programs like that already built in. So look, any way that I can help foster that, let me do it.
Yeah, well, we're very lucky to have you just as a designer, but I can really relate to what you're saying about all of these avenues of our lives that we just kind of shut down, whether they're self-imposed or imposed by the society around us. I mean, there are innumerable pathways that I think I closed down for myself or just were closed down to me, or that I just thought weren't available to me because I'm trans. And that's one of the things that we're hoping to accomplish with the True Voice Award is to open up some of those avenues that maybe people didn't think were there before. So it's really touching to hear about your reaction to hearing about this. And doesn't it just go to say that how much we need a training program like this?
Yes, so absolutely.
And to have someone like Francesca helping us run the whole thing, it's just, she's a force of nature, and we're so lucky to have the support of Francesca in Washington National Opera. And I'm super excited about the production that you have in Atlanta. because we have such a prominent trans singer playing the role of Hannah before, which is just such a special thing about this production.
Absolutely. And Lucia is an incredible performer. Just being able to watch her perform is, the piece is very, very emotional. And then her performance on top of it is just stunning. And her performance with Blythe, who has all of this great experience and on top of an amazing voice. I mean, let's just get that out there. Mm-hmm. Both of them together embodying this character is not to be missed.
Yeah, I cannot wait. I mean, I'm going to be in Atlanta for, I think, 12 hours, but that's the reason that I'm making this trip, is because I cannot wait to see Lucia and her performance in this. Blythe has performed as one, I think, more than any other performer. So I know Blythe quite well, and I love Blythe. And there's something about Lucia that makes me, I feel like I already know her through Blythe, and I can already sort of sense that they're going to fit really well together. So I can't wait to actually see that on stage. I'm really looking forward to that tomorrow night.
I can absolutely confirm your hypothesis. They work beautifully together. Their blend is quite lovely in performance as well as their musical blend. It's really, really quite stunning.
Yeah, because one of the things about it's rather hard to explain without seeing it, but you know, As One is the story of one person, but there are two aspects to that person sung by two different parts. And you know, it's certainly not, you know, kind of this split into two persons. It's like two performers performing two aspects of one person. And at its best, it, even though that's kind of a rather unconventional way to portray anyone, mm-hmm. It at its best, when those two performers can just kind of work with each other and riff off of each other and react to each other, there's this fusion that happens that's really beautiful. And I think I might see that tomorrow night with the two of them.
I think that you will. There are some truly touching moments, and this is a little bit of a spoiler, but you're going to experience what you're going to experience in the space. But when Lucia's Hannah sings a passage that deals with her dysphoria and deals with trying to live up to someone else's standard of who they think that she needs to be, Blythe's Hannah, who is like that little voice inside of you that says, no, keep going, everything's gonna get better, you're gonna be okay, she comes and like physically comforts. So it's a beautiful manifestation of those moments that we all have with ourselves in the hard times. There's always that little voice, no matter how quiet it is at first, that still keeps you going.
Right. Yeah. It's of course something that I relate to very much. And that's in many ways, as one that kind of emanates from autobiographical experience and all of those moments where you need that inner voice, that soul or spirit that's going to carry you through these tough times. And also, you know, it's not just all tough times. We tried to really tell a story of just the joy and euphoria and satisfaction and also just kind of downright goofiness and silliness and not having to feel like you're constantly presenting a totally. Gender to the world, just like hanging out and doing laundry. It's hopefully all of the above with this character of Hannah you get to meet.
One of the cool things about working on this piece is that your video content is just as vital to it as the music and as the libretto. So it's three creators' work all put together that are constants with every production. So every show is going to have these three elements. Now, how they're used in the space is the challenge to the design team. But as a creator, is that like an experience of letting go and trusting other people to handle your work well?
You know, because my background as a filmmaker is, as I was saying before, you make one film, then you put it out in the world, and there's kind of very slight modifications in how that gets presented. And, you know, we get bent out of shape if the contrast is off or something. But for the most part, it's like, it is what it is. The creative latitude that the designers have in order to portray this, to present this video, is really tremendous. And I have to admit, at first it took some getting used to for me to like have this idea of how it's supposed to be and it should be exactly like that. But after a couple of productions, it was just, I became very enamored of just watching and waiting to see what different designers are going to do with the presentation of the video. It's very rewarding for me to just see how you can make one thing that's hopefully malleable enough to be presented in these different productions, but still kind of holds this kind of through line of integrity that adds to the music and the libretto, as you say.
That's a really cool place to be as an artist.
As one was my first time working in opera. For the most part, I approach drama from the story angle, from the actual, you know, text and the libretto. But it was also just kind of a very natural unfurling of the libretto into this film, which we actually created a large part of. Many of the scenes that I shot were actually done during a workshop for the piece shortly before the premiere. We would workshop the piece. It was in Utah. And then like during some of the breaks or, you know, after we finished up for the day, I'd steal some of the performers and go out and shoot a scene here or a film there. I think it was the scene you were talking about before is takes place in a stadium. Some of the shots in a sports stadium.
Yep.
Anyway, it's a very natural kind of visual expression of this story that we, Mark and I, came up with for the libretto. I don't know. I try not to think about that stuff and too much. And just let it, as I said, unfurl. And it is a pretty cool spot to be in where it just unfurls. So I hope that it did for you, and I hope that it does for audiences.
Absolutely. As a filmmaker, you've done so much work around trans experiences, and one of those experiences is your own. Your film Prodigal Sons, just, it was like an arrow through the heart of anyone who has grown up in a small town and has dealt with returning to small towns post-transition and post just moving away from the rural space and moving to a city and working in the entertainment industry, and also dealing with family members who may be in crisis. If anyone has not seen this film, I urge you to do so. It's a really, really fantastic film and a very poignant portrait of family life and how hard that can be. And I just sort of wondered if you have any words of advice for anybody who is going back to their family reunion or their school reunion or returning to their roots after a transition.
Yeah, you know, well, the world has changed a lot since that film was made. I mean, it came out in 2008, which is not all that long ago, but in like trans, like evolution years, it's about a century ago, it feels like, because so many prominent events have happened since then. I would caveat this a little bit, this advice, but I used to feel like I had maybe something to apologize for by just being who I am. And it took me a while to figure out that I didn't, that this is me. You get what you get. This is who I am. And getting rid of that sense of being uncomfortable or apologetic for who I was is, I'm very glad that I hit that spot. And I also realized at a certain point that if I walk into a meeting, a conversation, a dialogue with someone, and I'm showing up with that uncomfortable aspect, or this apologetic aspect, or like, look, I have something to tell you, it just sets a stage for how the rest of that conversation goes. But if I just arrive there saying, this is who I am, I don't have anything to apologize for, nothing to really even explain to you, then we can just start the conversation as equals and keep the whole dialogue an equitable one. It makes the conversation a lot easier and relatable for the person, for the other person on the other side of that conversation. So that's what I would say to folks. And I mentioned that I might caveat it a little bit. I mean, like, look, I realized that to have a conversation and present yourself as trans in, for me in New York City where I live or another urban center where I live is a very privileged situation where it, you know, there may not be a lot of danger involved in a way that there might be in other situations. So I don't want everybody to feel like they need to kind of charge into situations that might be dangerous. I think sometimes we LGBTQIA folks on the coast can sort of get out of touch with what a lot of folks are going through in rural America when they're growing up. And actually, I feel like a lot of those situations have really gotten worse in the last 10 years that I was talking about, since Prodigal Sons came out, 10 plus years. So, but I think you can do both. Like, I think you can be cognizant of the situation that you're in and whether or not something might, you know, there might be something potentially dangerous in there, but also not apologize for who you are. You know, I think there's a way to keep both of those antenna up.
That's a beautiful way of handling things, because I bring it back to your film. You express a lot of bravery to me in terms of being an artist, because you're willing to show that not every interaction is peachy keen. You know, not every interaction is just rainbows and hearts and acceptance. It's not. And being able to handle those moments with grace and respect and dignity is, that's bravery in a nutshell, as far as I'm concerned. So I really appreciate being able to see that on film. And like you said, things have changed so much in the past 10 years. Lots of things have gotten better. Lots of things have gotten worse for people who are not in the areas that support people or acknowledge that they need to support people. I think a lot of small town people would be welcoming and opening and supportive, but they just don't have that person in their life that makes this a real issue to them yet.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I love what you said about having grace and dignity, because if you or I can be the one with grace and dignity in this interaction, and let somebody else get all like full of hate, you know, it can be uncomfortable, but I think that if we just do that again and again and again and again, then pretty soon our story gets out there. And it's really the reason that I think Mark and I took as an approachable tack as we did in the libretto. I mean, hopefully Hannah is somebody you could bump into and get to know. And by knowing her story, our hope as creators is that it will make the world a better place for other folks like Hannah. And you can sort of feel like you've already met someone. When Prodigal Sons came out, I kind of started doing some sort of national press for the first time. And I was always quoting this statistic that came from GLAAD at the time, about 2008-09-10. The statistic was that 9 out of 10 people knew somebody who was LGB, but way less than 1 out of 10 knew somebody who was T, who was trans. Mm. And that has changed. It's now about, I think, 4 out of 10 people know somebody who identifies as trans. But, you know, until we have more people who have met someone who's trans, who don't, you know, see some caricature that yeah. they heard about in the media, or, you know, these days there's plenty of fear mongering yeah. That's going on about trans folks, which I really just don't understand, especially when we're talking about trans kids. I mean, are trans youth really that scary? Are they really going to shake the foundation of our society? I kind of think not, especially when you dig a little bit deeper at a lot of this fear mongering and you find out that there's one trans kid in the whole school system or the whole state that's causing all of this turmoil. It just,
right.
it feels more like an attack and targeting this, you know, very relatively small group of trans folks. But back to our statistics, like the more stories that we hear, the more people that we know, I think at the end of the day, the more that message gets out there and the, you know, the more relatable we are, and hopefully as one can play a big part of that, at least in the upper world.
It absolutely does. Its existence is revolutionary in the upper world. And as an artist who's using parts and pieces of your lived experience in your art, on film and on stage, how do you do your own self-care? Because putting that visibility out comes with the risks, and it also comes with a lot of expended energy and strength. So how do you bolster yourself for the next round, the next project, the next thing, because you're front and center with it?
A long time I felt like I had to be just out there on social media. Mm. And I, to be honest, I've really dialed that back, because I don't think anybody's, if you can show me an example of one person's mind being changed by social media arguments, maybe I'll like reconsider. But as far as I can tell, people show up pretty locked in and just want to yell at each other. And I really tried to to dial that out. I don't spend a lot of time on social media because of that. That's probably one of the healthiest things I've done recently is to dial that back. It's a shame. It's a shame because for a while, like, Twitter was great for a while. Facebook was awesome for a while. But not a lot gets accomplished these days.
This is why we can't have nice things.
Yes, that's why we can't have nice things.
Well, with your work out in the world, we do have some nice things. And I'm so grateful and thankful to get to talk to you about it. And do you have projects coming up that you'd like to tell us about or things that you can tell us about?
Okay, so Laura Kaminsky and I have an opera together called Hometown to the World.
Cool.
It's going to be, it's set in a small town in Iowa, a town called Postville, which had a bunch of Iowa farmers until the early 2000s when a bunch of Lubavitcher Hasidic Jews from Brooklyn showed up and started a kosher meatpacking plant, which attracted a lot of workers from around the world. And all of a sudden, this tiny town of 2000 in Postville, Iowa, was one of the most culturally diverse cities in the U.S. This amazing example of like the American dream, if you ask me, this like cultural experiment that we're all working on in America. Until one day in 2008, when the Immigration Customs Enforcement Service, ICE, raided the workplace and arrested about a quarter of the town because they were undocumented and deported them. And that meant about another quarter of the town followed them. So pretty soon this, you know, example of the American experiment has half the people and half the tax base and the lifeblood of the community, which is this meatpacking plant that shut down. And there's this turmoil caused by this the immigration policy. So the piece Hometown to the World tackles that issue and with three characters tries to tell the story of this community in the aftermath and how they put things back together. And that's going to be in New York at the Town Hall. It's going to be one of the first operas that they've done ever, and it's part of their 100th anniversary. And so, yeah, that's coming up in November.
Awesome.
If anybody's interested in that.
Absolutely.
It was great to work with Laura again. And then I'm also working on a film about the science behind gender. You know, a lot of folks are talking about the kind of social trends that are changing the way that we see gender and biological sex. And this is about the science behind it, which, believe it or not, is like there's much more blurry gray area. And not this kind of stark black and white male-female distinctions. And it sort of looks at the mysteries behind that and the history of different ways of defining and perceiving gender and different cultural applications of that. So we've kind of, you know, migrated to a very binary way of looking at gender and most of Western culture, and this tries to show us that there are a lot of different ways to look at that. Also working on developing a film about climate change, also developing a film about, I don't think I can talk about that one yet, but anyway, I'm staying busy. And like I was saying before, my self-care is just getting channeled into that next issue that we need to tackle and hopefully elucidate.
Well, thank you for taking up your lens and your sword at the same time. Things like this are how things get changed in the world, because everyone can watch a film. You can find a film, you can stream it, you can go to a theater, everyone can see a film. And the limitation of live performance is often that we are in a specific place at a specific time. That's also the magic of what we do as well. But I'm so thankful that your film projects and things that you can see on television are going to be accessible to people. I'm really, really thankful for that.
I hope so. Thank you so much. And thank you for everything you're doing in Atlanta with this production. I'm very excited about it. And I can't wait to see it and to meet you in person tomorrow, I believe.
Yes, absolutely. Let's have a big old hug. Let's do it.
Okay.
Awesome. Well, thank you again for joining us on the show. You can watch Kimberly's work online through her website, KimberlyReed.com. If you would like to see some of my work as well, of course, you can check it out on my online presence at ericteaguedesign.com and Oppergeist on Etsy and Instagram. A huge thanks goes out to the team at the Atlanta Opera for making this podcast possible. And if you have enjoyed our show today, please don't forget to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts and like and subscribe everywhere else fine podcasts are downloaded. And as always, y'all means all. So come as you are, and your spotlight is waiting.